We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Welcome back to the UFO show, Dan. I am Ty Hildebrandt. He is Dan Rubenstein. This is the Solid Verbal. It's our Friday UFO show today, the unsuspecting Friday orbit, Daniel, which we'll explain in a little bit. Sir, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I showered, cleared the mind, feeling focused and centered. We're recording the UFO show, and then that's going to be followed by the Bruinet for the Patreon subscribers. That can be found at verballers.com. But really feeling quite good, Ty. I don't know what it is, but because you came up with this fantastic theme for the UFO show, because the questions are really inspiring a bunch inside of my brain for the Bruinet, hopefully you are. Ooh, you see that? I have so much excitement that the pop filter keeps moving on my microphone. Whoa. And bringing so much electricity.
Okay.
Quite excited for this recording sesh.
Don't forget, as Dan mentioned, verballers.com. If you're interested in checking out our Patreon and all the cool stuff we're doing over there, if you want to listen to and watch the Bruinet, you can do so on the Patreon.
We're going to drink beer and go places, right? Is that what's happening on the Bruinet every week? We're drinking beer and going places?
That is what we do. That is what we do. I've got my Solid Verbal pint glass here, which I will brandish proudly.
Yeah, same. All I'm going to say about the Bruinet is it's a bigger, better, more open and thorough Ty Hildebrandt.
That's right. I think that's right.
Than you get on here. Okay, that's all. Okay.
I think that's right. Solidverbal.com is our website. That's where you can subscribe to the show. Also, the newsletter. You can find it out there. All the usual hotspots, right? Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Got a YouTube channel where we post some of the clips. We obviously post larger ones on the Patreon feed. Why don't we jump into news?
Okay.
The last breaking news boop. Drop that we did took a little boop. Bit out of the voice.
Boop, boop, boop. Hey, hey, hey. What does Carol Baskin say? Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
It's time for breaking news. Boop, boop, boop.
So I think we've got, 15 more games that have been canceled or postponed this week.
Yes.
As per usual now, it's just kind of the table stakes. We go on out there, we do our preview show, it drops on a Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, and we just sort of expect that along the way there will be announcements. There could be some additional announcements before the end of this recording, but here's what we got. Games that have been canceled or postponed. Ole Miss at Texas A&M, Georgia Tech at Miami, Charlotte at Marshall, Texas at Kansas, Central Arkansas at Louisiana. We've got Wake Forest at Duke, Arizona State at Colorado, Houston at SMU, Navy at South Florida, Ohio at Miami, Ohio, Utah State at Wyoming, UAB at UTEP, Louisiana Monroe at Louisiana Tech, UNLV at Colorado State, and recently, Michigan State at Maryland, as Michael Oxley has reportedly tested positive.
Yeah, one of, I believe, 23 positive tests in the past week or two. So Maryland is certainly not in a good spot with regard to positive testing.
Not trending in a great direction. This was much the case a week ago. Hopefully there aren't more games that are added onto this list because it's already quite lengthy. But, you know, it's only Thursday right now at time of recording. So there's plenty of time for things to go sideways in a few of the other contests.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't. But yeah, last week was 15. We're at 15 right now, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay. And so we've got half of Thursday and all of Friday and perhaps into Saturday for more. Hopefully the number is zero moving forward.
Also notable, JT Daniels. You may remember that name. He transferred over to Georgia from USC. He got hurt last year at USC. Couldn't play, transferred over, got immediate eligibility with Georgia. We've been waiting for a while for him to be cleared medically to actually go out there and play on a Saturday. And clearly we've talked a lot about Stetson Bennett and DeJuan Mathis and the quarterback and more broadly the offensive situation at Georgia.
Yeah, and Jamie Newman opting out for sure. Yep.
Jamie Newman, right. It's been a bit of a revolving door at the quarterback spot for Kirby Smart. JT Daniels is going to be getting the start this Saturday evening in Sanford Stadium against Mississippi State. So this much-awaited arrival of JT Daniels is set to begin. We'll have to see if he gives them anything more at the quarterback spot. I think he will. I know you and I kind of disagree to what extent we should be excited about what we already know of JT Daniels at USC. But yeah, it's, I think, a good time for Georgia to be able to trot somebody else out there because that quarterback spot in particular has definitely been a bit of a pain point over the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and I suppose if he looked incredible in practice after the Alabama game, before a bye week, before Kentucky, then we probably would have seen him then. Incredible physically, incredible in terms of picking up the offense. I imagine it's more physical than the latter. With regard to why we haven't seen him yet with some of Stetson Bennett's struggles, there are four games left. Obviously, this year does not count eligibility-wise to anybody who doesn't want it to count for them. So that's not a redshirt deal like it would be having those four-game maximum under his belt. So I am hopeful that Georgia has just reached a point where they are ready to see JT Daniels, and he has reached a point physically where, you know, he looks good and ready to close out these last four regular season games for the Dogs. So hoping to see a little more spark from this Dog offense.
And speaking of the quarterback position, our final news tidbit here, Florida State is likely going to start Jordan Travis at quarterback against Clemson, and that's because Chuba Purdy had season-ending surgery, Dan. So it was on his collarbone. He broke it during a preseason scrimmage and aggravated it during the game this past Saturday against NC State. He underwent surgery for the original injury and apparently was always going to need a follow-up procedure to remove a plate and some screws.
Yeah.
But that surgery was obviously expedited because of what went down this past week. So sucks that he's not going to be out there, but to some extent, this was at least an expected procedure for him.
If he's the future, protect your future. No point in him gutting something out for the rest of Florida State's season. Agree.
That is all I have, Dan. Do you have anything further?
No, I think that's all that's worthwhile to talk about. Perhaps we've left something out, but there's always online to talk about it further. So I think we move forward with our game.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Unsuspecting Friday Orbit. Are you familiar with the online game Among Us?
Not before today. No, I wasn't.
Among Us. So today's game is based, however loosely, on the popular online game Among Us. It's a fun game. It costs like $5. It's gained a lot of popularity in the age of COVID, where people are trapped inside and playing more virtual games and connecting online than ever before. In this game, it's one of those deals where you're all in a space capsule, spaceship. And one, in some cases two, of your crewmates have been replaced by parasitic shapeshifters, Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah.
Their goal is to eliminate the rest of the crew before the ship reaches home. The imposter or posters will sabotage the ship. They'll sneak through vents. They'll deceive, they'll frame others to remain anonymous and kill off the crew. Very morbid.
Intentionally.
Yeah. Morbid, mm-hmm. Dark. It is 2020. Here we are.
That's true.
We are playing a modified version of that.
Okay. How does it go?
In our version, I'm going to talk about four ships of college football coaches.
Okay.
One coach on each ship is secretly destroying their respective football program. Not necessarily the others on the ship. It's right. A brotherhood, this coaching rank.
Okay, so it's a squadron of ships, and we need to figure out which captain is sabotaging, is traitorous, is treasonous, is subverting the goals of the ship for his own gain.
To some extent, yeah. Except it's not so much a crime against the other coaches on the ship. It's really a crime against their respective program. You get the drift.
Right. We're figuring out which ship is being subverted. Okay.
We're figuring out who on each ship is secretly okay. destroying their football program. All right.
Okay.
So here's
gotcha.
The deal. Let's go to ship number one. Here are the crew members on ship number one, Dan. We've got Jim Harbaugh, coach of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Fuente.
Fuente.
Coach of Virginia Tech. Dana Holgerson of Houston. And David Cutcliffe of Duke.
Whoa.
David Cutcliffe of Duke.
So I need to figure out, or we need to figure out, which of these four. So Jim Harbaugh as it relates to Michigan. Justin Fuente as it relates to Virginia Tech. Dana Holgerson as it relates to Houston. David Cutcliffe as it relates to Duke. Who is working against their own team among these four coaches?
That is correct. Who is most working against their own team?
So it's not Jim Harbaugh trying to murder Dana Holgerson or vice versa.
I don't think they would get along, do you?
Weirdly, yes.
Okay.
Like, I think the road trip would start out awkwardly and with a little bit of bitterness at the first rest stop, but then they'd be singing like Chris Farley in Tommy Boy with David Spade. Yeah, that's where I think we're going with this. Okay, anyway, so are we each weighing in or is it just me?
No, it's a conversation, Dan.
Okay.
It's a conversation. So here's the lay of the land here. The Harbaugh thing is well documented in the national media, among Michigan media, certainly among the two of us on this show.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked a whole lot about Fuente, Holgorsen, and Cutcliffe. I think Cutcliffe's a really tough sell here because it's Duke. And
he's the best modern Duke coach, without a doubt.
Best modern Duke coach, without a doubt. The program has stalled. It has stalled. And if anything, it's gone a little bit in the wrong direction. But still, relatively speaking, I don't think it's a situation where what Cutcliffe's doing is actively bringing Duke down. So I think that narrows the field to Harbaugh, Fuente, and Holgorsen, Dan. Does that make sense?
Yeah. They go, 5-7 last year? They're not playing well at the moment. But before that, 7-6, 8-5, they had a 10-win season, 2013, 9-8. So they're like, these are including bowls. So yeah, I could see why you would think it's headed in the wrong direction, but it's Duke. It's still Duke.
Of the remaining three,
yeah,
whose actions as head coach are most actively bringing down their program?
So I don't think Jim Harbaugh is intentional. Like, I don't think anybody's intentionally, really. But, you know, if there is a crime with Jim Harbaugh, it's a crime of passion. He loves Michigan football too much to let it go to the hands of anybody else. So he's destroying it from within. No, I don't think it's Harbaugh. I don't think it's Fuente. I think it's Holgorsen. I think the whole redshirting debacle last year, where after the slow start and the injuries and the transfer, like, I think that decision, and we saw reports of a chasm, I think, between Dana Holgorsen and the players pretty quickly. There were reports, I think, from a couple offensive linemen. I think that would be the move right there. I think if I were to put this game on any of these coaches, right now I have it on Dana Holgorsen, that he is a captain without a plan, and that's actively working to disrupt the well-being of his ship.
How do we feel about, so I agree with you that Holgorsen's probably the answer here. How do we feel about Fuente? You know, we haven't talked a whole lot about Virginia Tech this year because it's been a weird year. They're 4-4 now overall. Fuente's first season was 10-4 overall. Won the Coastal, won the Belk Bowl. Seemed like things were going in a good direction. But since then, it's been kind of a slow drip. 9-4 the next year, second in the Coastal, lost the bowl game. 2018, 6-7 overall, third in the Coastal, lost the bowl game. Last year, 8-5, second in the Coastal, lost the Belk Bowl.
Yep.
Who knows what we make of this year? Who knows where they finish in the ACC as a whole, right? I mean, to some extent, we throw all the records out, literally the window,
have
in
to
2020. But, you know, there's a lot of discontent, I think, in the Virginia Tech universe because it's tough to follow a legend. It's tough to follow up Frank Beamer, who had a ton of success in Blacksburg for so long. And outside of Hendon Hooker, I know I've compared Virginia Tech a bit to kind of like the Northeastern TCU. There's kind of that feel of inconsistency and treading water there. Is it fair to even put Fuente on this ship?
Sure. I mean, with the direction of the defense, which I think is improving and will improve, but of course he keeps Bud Foster on, and so there's the continuity thing, and I don't know if it fully became his program until Bud Foster retired. So yes, the answer is yes, because of the losses, the spectacular ways in which Virginia Tech loses, that preparation, those in-game adjustments, those in-game decisions, what, losing by Liberty, it's a three-point game, they lose by Miami, it's a one-point game. The North Carolina game was wild. I think they came back, and then North Carolina had to score a bunch of points. Other than that North Carolina game, their win expectancy was in the positive for the other three losses. They should have beaten Wake, they should have beaten Liberty, and they should have beaten Miami. And so the in-game element of Justin Fuente on this list actually makes some sense.
All right, so our answer then is going to be Dana Holgorsen.
Dana Holgorsen, yep. Oh,
my God. Very morbid.
It's just the slow drumbeat of horror.
Dana Holgorsen on ship one. We've got
so
three
other
ships. So
was that somebody beating the parasite with a metal instrument?
No, I think that was the parasite murdering one of the non-parasites with some sort of metal instrument.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Clayton Toon, I guess.
Look, we're all big boys here, Dan.
I guess.
We're all big boys, and 2020 is a dark year.
Okay. Ship number two.
Don't care what you're into. Doesn't matter. It's all dark.
Okay, true.
Just steer into it. Ship two. Gus Malzahn from Auburn. Scott Frost of Nebraska. Kevin Sumlin, Arizona. And Gary Patterson of TCU. This is a very tough ship. Very tough ship to try and figure out, Dan. Which of these coaches, again, is either on purpose, I hope not on purpose, or not on purpose, bringing down their program more than the others? Any thoughts?
I'm not sure Kevin Sumlin's heart is in it enough to give the effort to thoroughly take down Arizona. That's a guess from afar. I don't know. You have to be a motivated parasite, right? You have to have some sort of motivation here. The interesting question to me is not which of these coaches is actively trying to subvert their program and is that militaristic, murderous parasite from within, but who of these coaches, Gus Malzahn, Scott Frost, Gary Patterson, is doing the most damage to the mental health and well-being of their team's fan bases?
Okay. This is open
to
interpretation. Open to interpretation, Dan.
Yeah, that's where I'd like to go, because to accuse somebody of mutinous behavior is that's heavy, even for 2020.
Even if it's by accident.
That's true.
Right? Like, we're just talking about not people who wish to do harm to their programs, but people who are doing harm without knowing it.
So between Gary Patterson and the almost no offensive evolution and momentum forward these past few years, Scott Frost, who with now years and years into his tenure, what we're 3 years in now and doesn't seem all that different, and the ways that they've lost Nebraska have been both spectacular and heartbreaking because it's been in the last second and also just not competitive at all. And then Gus Malzahn, just anytime you think Auburn's really good, they just look awful and vice versa. I'm going to say Gus because the hope that Auburn gives its fan base at multiple times these past few years, Iron Bowl wins, NFL draft picks, recruiting classes, they're on a level that Nebraska and TCU are not. So I'm going to say what Gus Malzahn has done in weaponizing hope is ultimately the most violent emotional harm that anybody has done to a fan base of these three coaches.
I think Malzahn's got to be the answer. I think it's got to be the answer. When I look at these four, I said it's got to be Malzahn. I don't know how. Like, you can't blame Scott Frost. Scott Frost is starting from a different point. And I do believe that if given enough time, he can build it up. But it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time. Kevin Sumlin does not feel all that different to me at Arizona than he did at A&M. He had better players at A&M.
Right. Hired some of the same assistants. Yeah.
Feels basically like the exact same like outcome here. And so if that's not long for Tucson, that would compute for me. But I just think it is who he is. He's not doing anything different. And Arizona signed up for it. They just knew what they were getting. The Gary Patterson angle is interesting. Patterson, if you've seen him on any of the ESPN film room broadcasts during the national championship, he's like a football savant. He's a football
dominates
savant.
Him.
He dominates him. He doesn't shut up, but he knows what he's talking about. He's
yeah,
a good
of course.
Coach.
It's a great watch. Yeah.
It's a great watch. If anything, he's a little intimidating just as a football presence when he's on those broadcasts because he knows so damn much. But it does feel like we've gotten to a point with TCU where perhaps that Virginia Tech slash TCU comparison holds, because there's a treading water type of feel to this program, especially on offense. Now, Max Duggan has been a bit of a revelation. It's just been kind of disappointing that they haven't really been able to build up a whole lot around him. Defense is always solid, but you do have to wonder a little bit if there's some sort of stubbornness or some sort of quality there that is preventing them from getting to the next level offensively, even though presumably they tried to get the band back together on offense, right? With their hirings and, you know, they're trying to really get this thing going. It just hasn't quite materialized. So I think you could make a case for Patterson, but I think the Malzahn answer is just too compelling, especially if you want to frame it as someone who's trying to do harm to the fan base, either intentionally or not. The whole will they, won't they complex of Auburn being good year in and year out is frustrating for us, frankly, as like podcast hosts, not even Auburn fans per se. So eventually one of these days that ride will be over for Malzahn, but it will probably be when you least expect it, because he's been here before. I know we've talked about it ad nauseum about, oh, this is going to be it for Malzahn, and it doesn't seem like it ever is. So one of these days it'll catch up to him. It just hasn't yet, and probably won't in 2020.
Yeah, I think that the Patterson thing is more just the ship needs repairs. We need engineers to look at the thrusters. What should we do? He's like, I got it. I know what's going on here. And he's not very good at diagnosing offensive issues and finding the engineers and mechanics to diagnose everything on the ship. And that's a problem.
Our answer here then is Gus Malzahn, right?
Gus Malzahn, absolutely, yes. Weaponizing hope.
It gets dark. That's quite the sound effect, isn't it?
Wow. It really cuts pretty deep, Ty.
Ship number three. Clay Helton, USC. David Shaw, Stanford. Mike Leach, new hire at Mississippi State.
Sure.
Dave Doran at NC State. So we could go a number of different directions here, but who's doing harm to their program without knowing it? Who is doing harm to the fan base without knowing it, maybe without trying? There are a couple names on this list that I think are compelling. So the Mike Leach one, I think, is somewhat obvious, because whenever Leach is at a place for an extended period of time, it seems he wears out his welcome. Wears out his welcome. Happened at Texas Tech.
Sure.
Obviously, at Tech, happened a bit at Wazoo. The early going in Starkville has not been great. But
no. To say well, the early going was amazing.
The early going, the first week.
Yeah.
Incredible. But since then, left a little bit to be desired.
Just god awful, yeah.
The Clay Helton answer, I think, is one that, look, if you read the description for the show, if you've listened to the first two ships, you knew Clay Helton was coming. We're going to talk more about Clay Helton.
Right.
Let's talk about David Shaw, though. Let's talk about David Shaw. Stanford has very notably taken a step back, Dan. Very notably taken a step back. Is that because of Shaw? Is that because of talent? Is it because Shaw not getting the right talent or the right coaches? What is going on at Stanford? How much of that do we place on Shaw?
Well, they had a bunch of transfers this year. A bunch of seniors transferred out, I think, because they didn't get into grad school at Stanford. I think things shifted in the way that admissions worked there. So their depth has taken a hit. They've missed on a couple quarterbacks basically since Kevin Hogan. And well-regarded, highly recruited quarterbacks, 4 or 5-star guys. And defensively, the talent hasn't been there like it was 7, 9 years ago. They have, you know, this linebacker's good, or this corner's really good, or this safety's good. There's NFL-level talent on that defense, but it's just the depth isn't there. And so that's recruiting, that's evaluation, that's development, that is assistant hires. And so I think David Shaw sort of falls under the Gary Patterson element to me, where
Okay.
Is still well regarded for good reason. Everybody likes David Shaw. He's smart. He's thoughtful. He has, by and large, succeeded at a place that's pretty difficult to succeed at in Stanford, as great a school as it is, as, you know, great a location weather-wise and everything like that as Stanford is. It's tough there. It's tough to attract assistants. Cost of living super high. I get it. But I don't think he is. I don't think he has that switch where what he's doing is so actively working against the program. I wish he would be a little bit more aggressive on offense with play calling, and you know, still, you know, far, far too conservative for me in what Stanford needs. Dave Doran, NC State's having a nice enough year, a nice enough bounce back year. I don't love their staff, and especially on the offensive side. You know, hiring Tim back is never an excitement thing for me, but has NC State lost to anybody they shouldn't have this year? Like, given the depths where the Wolfpack were last year, I guess maybe you can argue Pitt with some of the lows of Pitt, but they lost to Kenny Pickett, I believe, and they lost by a point on the road. They beat Virginia, they beat Duke, they lose to North Carolina, which, fine, you can give up 50 North Carolina, a lot of teams are. North Carolina is just better than NC State, and I know NC State was at a much better point 3, 4, 5 years ago, but even still, they had an incredible shot to beat Miami. They just beat Florida State. In retrospect, the win over Wake Forest looks better than perhaps it did early on. And yes, you lose to Virginia Tech. That's fine. We're talking about losses to what, top 30, top 40 schools. NC State is squarely an average to maybe above average team in the ACC.
Yeah, and
I
guess what?
Can't fault Dave Doran as a saboteur in this situation.
Guess what? Had he not gotten hurt, Devin Leary probably would have been there. Their star quarterback this year. He had
beats Miami. Yeah.
A pretty impressive showing.
Though Bailey Hawkman's been fine.
The early going. But Hawkman has been fine.
Yeah.
He has been fine. So I agree with you. I don't think it's Dave Doran. I don't think it's David Shaw. But let's talk about Clay Helton. Clay Helton, if you go on out to any website that tries to track coaches on the hot seat, you're going to find Clay Helton, if not at number one, at least in the top three, top five. He just has to be there because USC is never void of talent. They've always got it. They're in a fertile part of the country when it comes to recruiting. It's a program that sort of recruits itself. And at least in the early going, I think so. You would know better than me, but they've never had trouble getting football players to go to USC.
Didn't recruit. Took a year off of recruiting itself. Yeah. Went down to Coronado Island.
It's a wonder that we're in 2020 talking about Clay Helton. This is another guy who was reportedly getting fired a handful of times. And still hasn't. Don't know if it's going to happen in 2020 given the climate, but it does not feel like he is long for USC. The question, I guess, would be,
USC 12th out of 12 in the class of 2020 in the Pac-12. 12th out of 12.
Terrific.
Only 12 commitments, 2 blue chips out of those 12.
The question that I have is Clay Helton doing anything more wrong than any of his predecessors? Like, is he worse than the last guy? Is he doing something that is actively dragging this program?
I think the anger among USC fans, if we're going to look at the fan base, is more with the administration. Like, I don't think people fault USC for making the decision to hire Clay Helton, given the success he had as an interim coach. But given the extension, I believe, after the Rose Bowl, maybe that's wrong, but I'm going to put it out in the universe anyway. I'll look it up as I'm talking. And the opportunity to replace him with somebody that fans felt would do a better job at USC and the administration not doing that, be it for financial or otherwise reasons. I don't hold it against Clay Helton. I think it's more of the, like, remember somebody tweeting CJ McCollum to like win a playoff series before you can talk or something like that.
Right.
And CJ McCollum tweeted back. I mean, CJ, we love CJ McCollum. He's Lehigh, right?
Yep.
I'm trying, Jennifer. I feel like Clay Helton is squarely in the I'm trying Jennifer mode. He really is trying. He's just the Clay Helton ship doesn't have the thrusters. It does. Yeah. It just doesn't. So I'm going to go with Leach here.
I think
I'm
going to
go with arrogance of Leach, the public behavior of Leach, the sort of self-awareness about the Mike Leach brand above all else about him, the disconnect with the Mississippi State culture upon arriving in Starkville. I'm going to go Leach here.
Don't hold back, man. Tell us what you really think. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's an easy one.
I think it is too, because Doran, Shaw.
And you see and players Helton. Just full on bailing. They're just like, nah, I'm done.
Full on bailing.
Yeah.
Doran, Shaw, and Helton are all trying their best. They're trying their best. And, you know, I think in at least two of those cases, it's a tough place to win. The Clay Helton thing, that ship's been taken on water for a while. Not to mix our metaphors here, being in outer space and all, but, you know, that's not necessarily news. The Leach thing came in and caught a lot of people by surprise when he took that job, and obviously caught the SEC by surprise with KJ Costello throwing for a record amount of yardage in week one. And then things have really gone sideways.
Do you hear a giant mower outside?
It's that time of the week again, isn't it?
That time of the week, Ty. Absolutely. I was so hopeful. I'm ready with song to essentially celebrate you saying Clay Helton is a nice guy. Everybody says Clay Helton's a nice guy, and you didn't do it.
No,
and I'm so
it.
Upset because I was ready with a song.
Well, the thing is, Dan, about Clay Helton, yeah. Everybody says he's a nice guy, you know?
Oh, yeah. We didn't do a fantasy thing this year because it's just you. You control the fantasy thing about Clay Helton is a nice
guy. It's true. All right.
Yeah, I was ready.
Leach is our Next. Answer here. Just get this out of our system. Have to do it. Man.
Oh, my God.
It's going to haunt your dreams.
Brutal.
The last ship. This is, I think, the hardest. Tom Herman.
I don't know.
Tom Herman.
I immediately
at Texas.
Selected somebody.
Chip Kelly at UCLA. Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. And Dino Babers at Syracuse, Dan. I don't think there's an obvious answer here. Again, who is either knowingly or unknowingly bringing their own program down, knowingly or unknowingly putting their fan base through undue anguish? Who is your eye drawn to here?
Charles Chip Kelly.
Really? Why?
Yeah. The recruiting thing. UCLA is not a difficult place to recruit to. Yes, there are academic standards, but they have long recruited very, very well in Southern California. I like to make the argument, though, that some Southern California talent is wildly overrated for whatever reason, just because everybody wants Southern California players to be really good, where the culture of high school football isn't necessarily robust enough to produce as much blue chip talent as people perceive it to produce. I think what Tom Herman has attempted to do, his hires have not always been on point. We've talked about Beckmeyer syndrome. I think he is turning over every rock. I think he really is trying. I don't think his actions point to something so egregiously wrong. It doesn't look like it's fully working out, that his decisions haven't worked out. Same with Jeremy Pruitt, although the recruiting is there. Some of the improvement is obvious. Some of it, and just look at 2020, isn't as obvious. But, you know, the defense isn't the problem in Tennessee, largely. They've got guys on defense. They recruited the offensive line pretty well. Dino Babers, that's just a tough job. He did a good job with the players he inherited. I mean, the quarterback injuries have been brutal. The offensive line injuries have been brutal. And, I don't know if there's a reason that we can point to so many injuries and so much dumb luck with Syracuse, but I don't think it's Babers. I think he's a totally good coach. I don't know if he's worth having a conversation about as an upper power five level candidate like he has been these past couple of years, but I think he's fine. Chip, though, with the recruiting he's done at UCLA, I'm never a huge fan of building hope around a guy who is on his way down. And like it or not, the reality is you go up to Philly and then things go downhill in Philly, go to San Francisco. It was just not going to work out in San Francisco. He's only there for a year, the ownership, and he apparently didn't get along. And so he takes a year off and is like, well, I like the West Coast and UCLA is you can bring talent there and the Pac-12 is pretty winnable. And I think it appears to be, and listen, nobody loves the heights of Charles Chip Kelly more than I,
right.
But his tenure at UCLA points to, I don't know if it's arrogance. I don't know if it's just a, a stubbornness of like, this is how I succeeded at Oregon. This is how I will succeed at UCLA. And to not recruit on a level fitting of the Bruins and expecting to outperform the talent you bring in, I don't know. It just strikes me as working against the program and working against the ceiling of the program, which Jim Mora was a totally good coach at his best. UCLA was a competitive team. UCLA filled it some years it was an incredible defense. Some years it was, you know, I remember those Paul Perkins offenses, Brett Hundley. UCLA should always be an 8-ish win caliber team, and they're just not. And they haven't looked anywhere near it years now into Chip Kelly's tenure there.
Counterpoint. Tom Herman.
Okay, give me the answer for Herman.
I don't know if I have any answers on this ship. I don't know if any of them are.
Well, if you're firing two coordinators the same year, that's on you. That you hired coordinators that were both not working out and both not taking the program in a direction that matches your vision.
If you truly want to pivot and talk about the effect on a fan base, the Herman angle is interesting to me. You know, like, I think if you look at Babers, there's not really a fan base angle there with Syracuse. There are Syracuse people who listen to this show, but, you know, the Texas fan base is much more notable. The Jeremy Pruitt angle is interesting. I think there's a recognition among the Vols base that there's a deficiency at quarterback that they need to solve. They haven't yet, but it does feel like the talent has gotten better and the team as a whole, the depth and whatnot, it's getting there. Chip Kelly, UCLA, that fan base, you could tell me probably better than anyone about the UCLA fan base. I don't know if it's quite as hungry for a national championship or even a 9-win season as they are in Texas.
I think they're hungry for competence. That's what hungry all they're hungry for at this point. Yeah.
The Tom Herman thing, though, like the whole is Texas back question. It is, of course, a stupid joke at this point and way overplayed. But to your point about UCLA, like they should at least be a 8-win program, should at least be competent.
Of course. In a time where USC is down.
It does feel like Texas should be getting a lot more out of this program. And it's felt that way for a while. But think of the hype that followed Tom Herman to University of Texas at Austin.
Sure. Beat out LSU for him. Yep.
And there's no doubt in my mind that he has gotten them up for big games. He is a big game coach, Tom Herman. And he's been on this show. We love Tom Herman. I think he's a smart dude. I think he's a good coach. He's a nice guy. But it feels to me like there's a lot of meat left on that bone. And if you're a Texas fan, if you're watching this team week in and week out, if you are feeling like the talent is there to try and organize better and potentially win the Big 12, get a chance into that playoff. Like, I understand coming away very unsatisfied and a bit aggravated by that, even if you still generally like Tom Herman. So I think there is a case to be made for him over Chip Kelly, because I know that the fan base has much higher expectations, let's say, than they do at UCLA.
Well, here's the other thing with Texas, right? They're in year four. Now, this is a very different year for everybody. It's not an excuse, but it's just a reality, right? It's different for everybody. Penn State in a normal year probably doesn't look like this, right? Michigan in a normal year probably doesn't look like this. Now, it speaks to their ability to push through adversity and obstacles and things like that, and it's not a great look for schools like that. I don't know if you have friends like this or Solid Wife Kate has friends like this where there's always something. You're like, hey, do you want to meet up for lunch? And like, well, yes, but there's always something. There's always something with Texas. Playing against Texas Tech, a pretty flawed team in year two of a new coach, 63-56 last year. You're playing against a Kansas team, an awful, awful Kansas team. And they fire their offensive coordinator. They make an analyst their new coordinator. I believe that was the order of succession. And it's like 60-59, 59-57. The Oklahoma game goes a bajillion overtimes and they lose. So like they're giving people hope that they're on Oklahoma's level. And they play Oklahoma State and they play terrible, but they win a clunker against a good team. You're like, wow, we have the ability to win our clunker. There's always something. It's always something with Texas. And I don't know if it's a recruiting thing. I don't know if it's a culture thing. I don't know if it's a coordinator, an assistant, a malaise, a game planning, a treating their five-star players like celebrities, whatever it is. There's always something. Texas can't just go 10-2 and beat everybody they should and maybe everybody they should comfortably and lose to teams that are slightly better. Can't do it. Always something, Ty. That's the case for Tom Herman to me. In year four, he doesn't have them at least to that point where they're just outclassed, but they beat everybody they should.
I think the answer is still Chip Kelly.
Okay. My case is more convincing there. That in terms of this game.
In terms of this game, I think the answer is still Chip Kelly. But this is hard for me. This is a tough one for me. I really wavered between Herman and Kelly. But we'll go Charles
I still
Chip
don't
Kelly.
Fully understand the game. So I'm just going from my gut here.
If we put Chip Kelly, Mike Leach, Gus Malzahn, and Dana Holgorsen on the ship, Who is the chief among?
Oh my God!
Those
so like
saboteurs.
The Champions League parasite.
Yeah.
So who is sabotaging? Who is subverting? Oh man! From a leadership position,
we're asking who, either voluntarily or involuntarily, is doing the most to harm the program that they are at.
Wow.
Or, with your new twist, put the fan base through anguish. What's so hard about that?
Yeah. I mean, Gus is still doing more good than the others, right? Dana Holgorsen at Houston, Mike Leach at Mississippi State, Chip Kelly at UCLA. Gus has done far more good for Auburn. He's taken them to what? A national championship. He's won the SEC. He's beaten Alabama multiple times. He had, you know, was the coach of the most memorable play in modern college football history in the Kick Six. The offensive coordinator on the Cam team. So there's goodwill there.
I think it's got to be Leach, right?
I think it's Leach.
It's got to be Leach because he's just getting started. Yeah. He's just getting started. Ah!
Which we have seen coaches.
Wait for it.
Let's play it.
Oh, God. It goes through you.
We've seen coaches start off disastrously as they try to shift the direction of a program, perhaps schematically, culturally, whatever. So it wouldn't surprise if, as Mike Leach got more of his own guys, made, you know, shifts with assistants or whatever, that Mississippi State become a threat in the SEC. Year one was always going to be rocky. I don't think anybody predicted to this extent, but it's a tough year one for anybody given the circumstances.
And it's a wild ride too. It's a wild ride after that week one experience to kind of end
up.
Yeah,
that's the thing too, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we've reevaluated where LSU is as a team and as a program right now. So let's see. Texas Tech, his first year, and they were in a better place, I believe, when he took over. In 2000, they go 7-6. Washington State, absolutely in the dumps. They go 3-9, 1-8 in the then Pac-12. Yeah, it was the Pac-12 by 2012. That was the first year, I believe, of it. 1-8. These are his Pac-12 records. So he's almost in a bell curve-like parasitic place. 1-8, 4-5, 2-7, auspicious, but showing some feist, some improvement. 6-3, 7-2, 6-3, 7-2. Holy hell, what a stretch. 2015 to 2018, 2019, 3-6. So, you know, bringing in JC quarterback after JC quarterback with, Anthony Gordon. And who's the quarterback for the Jaguars now that was there?
Gardner Minshew. Yeah.
So that's never a great sign when you're not developing quarterbacks and you're relying on JC guys year after year. And so, yeah, starting out, it could be the bottom of the bell curve, but it feels like there's going to be a curve at Mississippi State one way or the other.
Let's play it just one more time. Just, just to really drive home the point. Oh, man.
Which of these teams, okay? So let's stick with my slight pivot. So of all these, what, 16 teams?
Yep.
do you think is the absolute worst fan experience in terms of I'm a fan of X Team and they do nothing but haunt my dreams, whether it's giving me hope and then tearing it down or just beating me down to such an emotional low point that I no longer can feel things?
I think it's got to be Nebraska.
You think the Scott Frost relationship to Nebraska fans?
No,
has
I don't.
Been
I don't.
Most brutal.
I'm not even counting Scott Frost in that equation. I'm just saying that the combination of, and we see it with like Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a good example, right?
Yeah.
A traditional blue blood. It's had a lot of success over the years. The game, to some extent, has kind of moved at a faster pace than the institution could keep up with. And for a long time with Notre Dame, it was the same deal where the expectations did not change, but the game around the program did.
But now that they've admitted that their independence is no longer a defining factor of their program,
they've
taken nice steps forward.
They've closed the gap. They've closed the gap. And they've taken, you're right, they've taken great steps forward. And Nebraska, to me, feels like they are in that, they're kind of trapped in that limbo state where the expectations are still there, maybe not quite to the same extent as they were at Notre Dame, but they're still there. And the program is constantly trying to figure out ways to play catch up. And a lot of that pressure now is on Scott Frost to deliver. I hope he gets time to do so because I believe he is the right guy for the job if given the opportunity, if given enough time to. But I can imagine being a fan of that program and just kind of constantly wondering, when is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? Is this the year that we see some progress that we can build on to take that next step to get there? So for me, I think it's Nebraska. You can make a case for Virginia Tech as well. I don't know if expectations at Tech are ever going to be as high as they would be at a place like a Nebraska.
Man, Virginia Tech hasn't been that good in a long time, though.
It's been a while, right? It's been a long time.
Yeah.
So you could make the case, but I think it's to a much lesser degree.
Okay, so the coaches who have teased, though, that have teased their fan bases with recent enough success. So you have Tom Herman in the Sugar Bowl with Texas, right? They're like, oh my God, we've ascended to this level. We're a New Year's Six program. We beat this blue blood in Georgia, a fellow blue blood in Georgia, and we have turned a corner. It seems like since that moment, it has been nothing but pain as a Texas fan, though they did make the Big 12 championship game. Like they're performing well enough at times, but their lows are so, even their wins in those lows, the always something factor, that's brutal as a fan, Ty. You know this.
Yeah.
I would say the Gus Malzahn experience has been trying for sure. Really, really trying. I think it's probably worse to be a TCU fan than an Auburn fan, considering that TCU was right there on the edge of the playoff. They win the Rose Bowl 2010. They had the amazing, I think, 2014 season with Trevon Boykin. And they're right there. They lose 61-58 to Baylor, and that changes the calculus of everything. And then there's just this hunt to recapture, right? That he's like this failed Dog the Bounty Hunter character in Fort Worth, that they're always hunting to recapture. And that is maddening to me, that they were so crazy razor thin close to symbolically making that leap. Whereas the Nebraska experience was always, I mean, it was fine during the Bo Pelini. I mean, not fine, it was volatile during Bo Pelini, but I don't think Scott Frost has done anything other than the outside expectations to do too much harm. It's been rough. The way Nebraska has lost, it's rough. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely rough. Arizona, I don't think qualifies here. USC is tough because they had that blip with the Rose Bowl, the 2017 team, Sam Darnold. But they've largely not been consistently good for over a decade. You know, have your A Lane Kiffin season, and then that's sort of it. NC State, I don't think qualifies here. They're down, but they don't qualify. UCLA doesn't qualify. The Tennessee experience.
Interesting.
So the Tennessee experience has been, it has to have been awful. I don't know that they've had the hope. I mean, they've had the off-season hope, but they haven't had the in-season winning hope. They haven't, you know, they don't all of a sudden trounce Florida or beat Alabama and you're like, okay, we've broken through, and then that have it ripped from them. So I think they're close to being in that category, but I think it's more Texas and Michigan.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Dan. I really do.
I think it's Texas, Michigan, maybe a dash of TCU, a dash of Powdered Frog.
I hear you. I still think I go Nebraska.
Okay.
But I hear you.
Is Nebraska's best recent win the loss to Ohio State 2 years ago?
It might be.
Yeah. I think like, hey, look, I mean, if you look at any article, like longer article about Nebraska's offense and Adrian Martinez, who was just benched, it's man, look at that spark he had, that stretch of games in the back half of 2018 really gave Ohio State everything they could handle. It's their best recent win.
Weird game today, Dan.
I loved it. I loved every second. Thank you.
Weigh in, solidverbal@gmail.com. Don't forget to give us a call as you're watching the games here in week 12. 408-VERBAL-1 is the reverb line, 408-837-2251. We will cut those up on Sunday and play them as part of our reverbs segment, Dan. We're going to hit the stop button now, and then we're going to do our brew and A. I've got a beer Correct. Here next to me that will put hair on your chest. I don't think you could handle this beer.
I definitely couldn't. Not with that description. Absolutely not.
So with that being said, I think this is where we bid everyone a fond adieu. Wish everyone well for the weekend. Stay safe. And by all means, stay solid.
Peace.